This is 2023-0580 in the matter of Christopher Richard Hicks versus the Union Board, Union Township Claremont County Board of Trustees. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Hicks, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, Chief Justice. Chief Justice, Justices, as it may please the court, the essence of this case is, in a world of ever-advancing technology, when government can put in place and puts in place systems to disseminate messages to citizens that are positive towards government and its programs, and they do so to distribution lists that they specifically build and curate for that purpose, that those distribution lists document the official action and speak to the conduct of the official action, what is the proper application of the judicial concept of administrative convenience? So this case is important on what is the scope and application that is proper of the term administrative convenience, which is a product of case law, not a product of statute. So I think also before the court in this case is the proper role of the court in determining the essence of the Public Records Act versus the legislature navigating what likely are going to be complex waters, not just now, but in the future, in terms of how government uses technology to pinpoint, target, curate, and engage citizens with messages that are specifically designed to be positive towards government.
Help me understand why the mailing list is a record of the township. The township, as I understand it, they didn't own the mailing list, they didn't have it, they didn't maintain it, they essentially went to, and tell me if I'm wrong about the record, they essentially went to a vendor and said, mail this to everyone in Union Township. Why is that the township's list?
I appreciate the question, Justice DeWine, and that is not correct. So
help me understand why.
A woman named Gina DiMario, who worked for the township, worked interactively with the vendor in building a list that they and she had access to. And no part of the denial of my request originally involved that we don't have the record or we do not possess the record. In terms of why such a list is a public record, maybe one could argue that if I walked into a township trustee meeting and put a distribution list on the podium and a trustee picked it up and put it in a file cabinet, that that's not a public record, that's administrative convenience. But we're talking here about lists that were curated and they were used in a government action. They were used in a specifically authorized government action, which was systematic over and over again to communicate those messages. So that list documents an action of government, an other action of government, of the office. And it does so again and again.
The list does itself or the dissemination of information?
I think the list speaks specifically to a key element, who got these messages. That's a key element of, especially when government can target and pinpoint, is who specifically received these messages documents the distribution function itself of where did it go. And there's cases you could look at, for example, in Daniels where lead notices going to people where those were public records because makes it a record.
But there's no question that what these people get via email or mail, there's no question that whatever they get, you have access to that, correct?
Correct.
So isn't it what the township produced with the actual record that is being disseminated, the public record, as opposed to the means of transportation or who on the outside gets it?
Thank you, Justice. There are a couple actions of government going on here. One is the creation of the messages. The other is the distribution of the messages. The list documents the official action of government of to whom were these messages going.
Could someone walk in and get a hard copy of the newsletter?
Justice, I appreciate the question, but there's one thing, which is the newsletter, and nobody's arguing whether the newsletter is a public record. Mm-hmm. My point is the action of government in distributing the newsletter, that is an action of government in and of itself. And it speaks something if only these people get it or only these people get it, or we target these people or we have different messages for different people. the messages plus who actually received the messages?
Different message for different people is accessible to
you. I'm sorry,
I didn't. Different messages to different people would be accessible to you. If a newsletter A went out to this group and a newsletter B went out to this group, that's accessible to you.
How would I know that it went out? If I wasn't part of group A or B, how would I know that something went out?
Can't you request the copies of or any newsletter that goes out so you'd get A, B, C, or D, even if they're four different?
I appreciate the question, but let's say that I sent a request to my township for all communications that went out because I'm trying to figure out what did you actually send out. In that case, what am I going to get back? I'm going to get back a response in a records case saying my request is overly broad.
Right.
So here we have a specifically identifiable record, a distribution list that is used recurringly. If you look at other cases that involve things where there are distributions happening, who the distributions went to, there have been cases where this court rules that those distributions, that is a public record of who they were going to, who those messages went to. What's interesting, the cases on which administrative convenience is largely based, you know, things like home addresses and dispatch or juror questionnaires and Beacon, you know, or pool information in Roberts, those cases have to do with predominantly information that is collected by government just in the course of its business and is not necessarily actively used by government. Here we're talking about curated lists paid for with taxpayer money using outside vendors that the township had access to and was part of, and the risk in this case is the term administrative convenience becomes a judicial statement that significantly undermines the Public Records Act.
So say we agree with you on that point, that administrative convenience is not an exception to the Public Records Act. I'll go back to where Justice DeWine began. We're looking at two lists. One's an email list that the township really isn't involved in. A citizen sits at home and decides, I'm going to sign up to get these notices. Pretty much what happens here if you want an alert on what happens after a case is heard. Then there's a second list, which is the mailing list. Now, are you saying that the township created that list, or based on what Justice DeWine just asked you, a third party vendor who's actually mailing the list actually is the one who's culminated the list of all residents that live in the township?
Thank you, Justice. The list, the mailing list, let me hit the mailing list first, since that was the second thing that you brought up. That was created in conjunction with the government and a vendor working together.
Okay.
The Gina DiMario, the person in the government, was intimately involved in creating that list. There was a never basis in the rejection of my request that we didn't have the list. There's no records responsive, was not part of the response to that list. That list, frankly, if the township had said they use, for example, Every Door Direct Mail, which is a post office service, in which then they would not actually have a list because the post office just delivers it to every, then they would have a case, but they actually curated a list. There were even conflicts in affidavits as to who was actually on the list. Did it include businesses? Did it include residents? Did it include both? Where there were different statements made by government actors as to what was actually included in the list. The email list, let me hit the email list. I think whether the citizen put their email in or not, once that is used in a government action, we took the email list and we used it to disseminate, that becomes a public record because it documents the action of government. It documents the action of to whom did this message get distributed. And that's very important now. It's very important for our future in terms of the ability of government to curate, target, message. Imagine a world in which government has specific lists where it's targeting Democrats, Republicans, apartment dwellers, house dwellers, and citizens have no ability to monitor the conduct of that action because under a judicially created concept of administrative convenience, that's all off limits.
So I want to go back to something that you just said. So they responded to your public records request, and as it relates to the physical mailing address, you said that the township responded that they do not have that document. Is that correct?
That is not the case. They responded that it was not a public record.
Okay.
They did not. I would have expected, having been involved in records requests, that if that was the case, the response should have been, we don't have a document responsive to your request.
Okay.
That was not the case. The response was that based on attorney general tests and based on other things that we've determined it's not a record, it's administrative convenience, and therefore we're not providing it to you. That was later invented in briefs, but it was not. You can go back and look at what was the original request and the response to that request, and never was that mentioned that we don't have the list. And that conflicts with the person who actually ran the program that says they had access to the list, and in which I filed an affidavit from that person as part of this case.
So if you were to receive just the email list only, would that be what you were looking for?
I think both lists document an action of government. Theoretically, on every newsletter, I could send a request after the newsletter, please provide me the documentary evidence of where this went. Okay? So I think both lists document an action of government and are a public record documenting an action of government. And frankly, if there were to be restrictions on that, then the legislature should deal with that. What's happened with administrative convenience is we've gone from the concept of things that arguably people would very much agree with, like somebody's trying to get information on citizens, people who are jurors, people at a pool, to the concept of now that applies to proactive actions of government and systems that they built. And they created lists for those systems specifically to disseminate messages to citizens meant to influence citizens' positive view of government. So that it's a slippery slope, and it was actually referenced in one of those past cases. There's a couple of them where we're supposed to be narrowly applying what the court said, you know, on, for example, the home address case, or the concern in opinions then that gone far afield, this administrative convenience thing, which is not part of statute, could get to the point where it undermines the Public Records Act. I think we're here. And this is very important, and technology is going to keep changing. The government's ability to target messages is going to keep changing. And this really is something that you should overturn, I think, the 12th District and the Court of Claims. And then the legislature should figure this out. This administrative convenience concept has gone way beyond those cases. Those cases bear no relationship to a proactive government program specifically designed to influence citizens' opinions of government and its actions.
So what if we had a situation where people could sign up for text messages, for instance, on severe weather warnings? Would those phone numbers be... Would you argue that those phone numbers would be accessible?
What I would argue is that the Public Records Act, as it's written, should determine that. And then the court should just go with what the law says. The legislature has modified the Public Records Act almost every year for the last 13 years. So this is if they want to put exceptions for specific things, then those should be put in the law by the legislature. And also, when you guys do stuff, it has a permanence to it. The legislature has the ability to, as technology changes and things evolve, to make adjustments to the law to reflect the policy that the legislature wished to have in place. The dangerous thing here is this administrative convenience concept is now exploding to a very broad statement that's way beyond, you know, home addresses of government employees, kids at the swimming pool, or jury questionnaires, into something that's an entirely different animal, a proactive government program to influence positively citizens on their views of government. I think I'm close to out of my time for this.
So you want to reserve the remaining?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Conover.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. Brody Conover on behalf of the Appalee, the Union Township Board of Trustees. I want to first clarify the record regarding the questions that Justice DeWine asked. And if you look at its record item 13 was the township's affidavit in support of the response. And if you look at paragraph 7, it says that the newsletter was sent to all addresses within the township. It doesn't distinguish between residences and businesses. And if you look at record item 16, paragraph 11, which is the former employee's affidavit, it says that it was sent to all addresses. And if you also look
But did you ever advance as a reason for denying the public record request that these weren't the township's records?
No, Your Honor. I think if you look at the original...
So haven't you pretty much waived that at this point, then?
Yeah, and I don't know that we're necessarily arguing that it's not in the possession of the government. I think if you look at the definition of a record in 149.011G, there's three components to what makes a record. The first is whether it's a tangible item. I don't think there's any dispute here that that would be the case. The second is that it was created, received, or comes under the jurisdiction of a public office. And again, I don't know that I would argue today that that could not be the case, that this, even though it's created, curated, and maintained by a third party, direct mail vendor, and I think the affidavit of the former employee specifies that the mailing list specifically was created by this vendor with the post office. The township wasn't involved. But I don't know, it still would be under the jurisdiction.
What if an interested citizen wants to verify what's in that affidavit, that representation, that it was sent to everyone, if they want to check and see if that's true?
Well, I think, Your Honor, we have to reset what the decision or action of the township was in this case. And I think if you look at it, the decision was to create a quarterly newsletter. It wasn't to create a mailing list. And so if you look at this mailing list, it's really incidental to the ultimate decision, which was to create a quarterly newsletter. So to answer your question,
wouldn't the list document the distribution of that newsletter?
Well, I think the distribution is merely incidental to the actual decision. And so if you look...
Well, but I mean, it seems pretty relevant. If you're a citizen, your tax dollars are going for this newsletter to know whether it's going to everyone in the township or 10 people. I mean, right? That seems a fairly relevant thing, and that seems a basic action of government that a citizen's Public Records Act entitles a citizen to know about it, doesn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, sorry. I think that what we look at, though, is the actual decision, which was made 2+ decades ago to create this newsletter and then send it to all the addresses within the township. There could be a variety of records that may have existed at the time that could be, for example, an initial resolution, a motion by the township trustees, an email, for example, a letter, maybe about in the mid-2000s, but to the vendor that says create this list. And so I think that would be certainly reflective in documenting.
How is the email list created?
So the email list, Your Honor, is essentially there's a landing page on the website. You type in, you can click to subscribe, essentially. It's a voluntary system. Folks can put in, they don't even have to put in a real email address. We've got a lot of anonymous ones.
They don't even have to put in a real name.
Exactly. Thomas Jefferson could very easily sign up for this 300 years later, 250 years later.
But why is that not a public record? I understand if you send it to everybody, the hard copies. But it's not the government. It's these people contacting the government. Why is that not a record of the government?
Sure, and I think if we look at the McCleary case from 2000, right, that's the most analogous, right? That's the photo ID program for the pool and recreation center.
Swimming pool.
The court ultimately decided there that these folks are electively choosing to use the government. The government's not, yes, we're putting out a landing page and inviting them, but we're not choosing who does it. And so I think in the court there ultimately said that the users of the system doesn't actually reflect the decision or activity of the government. And so I think if you look at it, it's most similar to the McCleary case, where the court said that when these written records are created incidental or because of a user's choice, essentially,
right,
then we can't.
So you're telling me that no email addresses that look fake or names that look fake were ever curated and taken off that list?
No, we send it to the list, the email serve list, that's where it's sent to.
But isn't it interesting for a citizen to know, whether it's the email or the mail, how many people are getting this to know if the government's spending its money wisely?
Sure, but I think that can be done by the invoice, right, from the...
But if you don't know how many people are getting it...
Well, the invoice could show, right, how many...
Might not.
Well, I guess, Your Honor, I don't know that it necessarily is relevant to the decision to send a quarterly newsletter. And, you know, I think there was the line of questioning from Justice Stewart about, you know, if there was an A, B, C, D, you know, let's say there's different newsletters out there, there could be a request quarterly, annually, or in some years in the past, that, hey, I'd like a copy of all the newsletters. So you're seeing the different messages that are being sent, and I think that's reflective of the actual decision, policy, procedure, operation of the township, which, again, that's, I want to make sure that we're talking about the correct thing here. And just for your all's knowledge, when a public records request comes into a local office, you've all maybe received them, but the first thing that we do is determine, are there responsive records? We keep talking about exemptions, and the General Assembly updates the exemptions to the Public Records Act in 149.43, but we're really not talking about any exemption. And so when we talk about liberally construing the Public Records Act, that's true, but we do that by, the next part of that turn of phrase is that we narrowly construe exemptions to that. And we're not even there yet because we haven't met the definition of the third component of a record in 149.011G, which requires any record to document the activity, function, procedures, organizations, procedures, or other activity of the public office.
How does a newsletter telling people what the township's doing not document its activities?
I absolutely agree that it does, and that's why the newsletter itself would be that was the decision, right, to create a quarterly newsletter. The newsletters, one, they're on the website, but two, if there was a request for that, we absolutely would provide it. But I think the contact list, which is where it is distributed, where it's sent, is just incidental to that.
What about your Mr. Hicks' argument that, hey, let the legislature decide this. This shouldn't be the judicial system making this decision.
I think the legislature already has. They could have easily stopped the definition of a record at the first two elements. It's an item, a tangible item, so a document, email, record, recording, whatever, and it's created, received, or under the jurisdiction of the public office. If that were the case, that would make everything in the government's possession.
But the concept of administrative convenience is coming from people in these kind of robes.
Sure, and I don't know that it's necessarily, I don't view it as an exemption to the Public Records Act. What I view it as is helping determine whether something is documenting the activity, function, procedures, organization of the public office. And so if you look at there's three cases really relevant here, right? It's McCleary from 2000, Bond, which is the juror questionnaire case from 2002, and then the Johnson case from 2005, which is the most cited public records case that you guys have issued. And those all really say the same thing in different ways, but I think it's looking at what documents the actual decision. So if you look at the dissent from Judge Powell at the 12th, this talks about the Jones-Kelly case. I know there's been reference to the Daniels case as well, both from this court after all those three cases. And those cases dealt with exemptions. So the Jones-Kelly case dealt with the foster care, the names and addresses of the foster care individuals across the state. That dealt with an exemption that was specific for that case. If you look at the Daniels case, which was a HIPAA-related exemption, it dealt with the exemption. So, and then both specifically those cases noted that we weren't dealing with determination of a record. It was already decided and conceded that it was a record. So I don't think that those are particularly relevant in this case, just because they don't deal with defining something as a record. And I don't view the administrative convenience, I don't want to call it a test, I think that's a little too strong, but the consideration of whether something is merely kept incidental to a decision is viewed or should be viewed as an exemption. And so I just don't think that that's particularly relevant. The exemptions really don't matter to me in this case, candidly.
So if we were to agree with Mr. Hicks, would we have to overrule Johnson?
I think at the very least you're going to have to significantly narrow it. I do think it would require an overruling of Johnson because it's discussing what we consider when we meet what meets the definition of a record. And there, I want to be also clear that I don't think the township is or really can argue for some sort of personal identifier or blanket home address exemption to the Public Records Act. That's not the case. Again, that deals with the exemption side. That's the General Assembly's spot to do that. But I think here, you look at the Johnson case and McCleary and Bond before that, you're dealing with contact lists, essentially, that are incidental to some sort of decision by a state agency. So, for example, in the Johnson case, there was concessions that the home address and the names and addresses of those employees was used by the state to send out a variety of information that related to the state's action and decisions. There was a policy that required all state employees, or at least for certain agencies, to provide an update whenever they got married or whether they moved. So there was that policy would be a public record. But the court said in Johnson in 2005 that the lists that are created incidentally to that, that are just really used to send that stuff out, isn't a public record because it doesn't meet the definition of documenting the actual function or decision of the state in that case. So I do think you would have to overrule Johnson or very significantly narrow it. And there was some discussion in the Buckeye Institute's amicus brief that said, well, Johnson says it's narrowed anyways. And if you look at paragraph 41, the narrowing of Johnson was specific to the definition of a record. It was essentially saying, the court said, we're not creating an exemption for personal addresses, but we're defining and narrowing this case within the context of the definition of a record. And I think that distinction is important, not to belabor, but that doesn't deal with the exemption side of it, and that's not what we're asking for here. So if there's no further questions, I'll cede the rest of my time, but I would just end by saying that I think what we would have the court write in this case is essentially to reaffirm the plain language of 149.011G and this court's prior precedents in McCleary, Bond, and Johnson to say that when a decision is made by a township and there's incidental contact lists or something of the sort that's really just kept for some sort of administrative convenience, so this mailing list doesn't have to be created every single time the decision to have a quarterly newsletter is made, that not be determined to not meet the definition of a public record. And so therefore we would ask for affirmance of the 12th district.
Isn't kind of the elephant in the room the fact that if it were opened up to a public record request and would be required to be turned over, that there's the potential for ordinary citizens of the township or the city or the county, whatever it is, to be harassed by people they don't want to hear from?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true as a policy consideration, Your Honor. Frankly, I don't know that necessarily impacts the definition of a record, but I do absolutely think there is some harm in this. And it's harm to the citizens, right, who presumably don't want to be harassed in their inbox or mailbox with cluttered communications. I think there's harm to the General Assembly by taking away the definition that they've narrowed with the third part in 149.01G. I think there's harm to the township and taking away some of their discretion, right? So we certainly could have released a list like this.
Because there's the fact of the matter is if we rule in the way that if we hold in the way that Mr. Hicks wants us to, legislators' mailing lists would be open season as well, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. And I think any political subdivision across the state, I want to make sure, I mean, there are certain times when a mailing list or home addresses of individuals that the government has might be a public record. So, for example, if a requirement of a superintendent is to live in the district, that's a job requirement, that's a decision, right? And so then in that case, the home address of the superintendent would be a public record. So for example, I want to make sure I'm hearing, if you're suggesting that the legislator, there's a list right now at the State House of all legislators and their home address.
No, I'm saying legislators who email out to their constituents just like the township does.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Justice.
So yeah. Their email list would be open season. So if their opponent in the election wanted to get all those addresses, they'd be able to go ahead and make that public records request and then presumably be able to use them, and the email war would begin.
Yeah, and I know that my time's expiring, so if I can answer. So I think that yes, so long as that would be a public record. Sometimes the political lists, if those are kept by a campaign, it might be slightly different. But I get your point and agree with you, Your Honor, that if this would open up to every political subdivision across the state, any sort of list that they maintain that is used to contact and provide certain information, including perhaps the severe weather alert list that you provided to Mr. Hicks. But with that, we would ask for affirmance, and thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Hicks, you have a minute, 41 seconds remaining.
I just want to address very quickly this concept of harassment. I think some people could think government messages are harassing, and there's 1,000 times more issues with the concept of one thing is good and the other thing is bad, or the fear of government that a citizen could respond to a message. It also gets into the slippery slope I see in some of the cases and some of the decisions where you start seeing judicial interpretation of, well, maybe a citizen has to prove they have a right to the record, or maybe how they might use the record would help determine whether it's a public record or not. I think this is pretty simple in that the legislature is the place to put exemptions to the act. I also disagree that anything involving a political candidates, this is not a political candidate sending out messages to their email list. This is a government-sanctioned program, and it's not incidental. It's not like we had the people make the newsletter, and they just incidentally sent it out to a list they managed with an outside vendor. It is the program. In terms of Johnson, Mr. Conover talked about narrowing it. I do think it needs to get clarified. I think it needs to get clarified what it meant in that case and in these other cases. I liked the question about how would a citizen prove that it actually went to all addresses? How would you be able to monitor the function of government? And I want to close by making this comment, and it's been in my briefs. I signed up for the email distribution, and I have never received an email newsletter. So think about that. I personally signed up, and I've never received one by email, but I can't verify what happened. Am I on the list and just not getting it for some reason, or did I get curated off the list? I'd ask you to overrule and let the legislature deal with these issues, and also at the same time clarify what administrative convenience to be is, so it doesn't become this broad, slippery slope where every address becomes administrative convenience.
I do have a follow-up question. Sure. Would we have to overrule the Johnson case?
I actually don't think so. I think you would need to clarify that, because that's a case specific to employee records used for incidental administrative purposes. It has nothing to do with the concept of a proactive government system meant to influence citizens' opinion. That, for example, in the pool case and the McCleary case, the system for people checking in and out of the pool was incidental to the pool. In this system, in these communication systems, the system is the system. It's not incidental. The mailing list, if you made newsletters and never had any distribution list, where do they go? Why would I create a newsletter that sits there and never gets distributed? It's a key part. It's not incidental. It is a key part of the system. And just to respond to your prior question, there obviously wouldn't be an invoice for email distribution. You know, that came up and it was like, well, the invoice for the newsletters. So again, I think that case does need to be clarified, but I think it can be done so without overturning it completely, because I believe this is a very different case. This is about a system that was designed and developed specifically to influence citizen opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.